to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And I was struck watching Saturday's game. Look, I was struck by a number of things. You know, partly how much commentators love to kick you on the way down, which frankly is a fairly new experience for us. We haven't really had enough time at the top to have the sensation of being a fading dynasty. But equally, when they were hyping us up in the last quarter as we ran away from things, sort of, not for the first time, was thinking, oh, both reactions seems a bit much.
Yeah, I mean, they're telling a narrative. In forgiveness to them, they're telling a narrative for the casual fan. It's always something to remember that commentators aren't commentating to us or to the kind of people that listen to this podcast. They're commentating to the people who might watch something else instead. So, one to remember. But I completely agree with your reaction. It was like, at one point, they said when we're coming back, and that's why they're a champion team. Well, we were a champion team, but you know, there's an awful lot of those champions not playing. And have you seen our last 8 weeks?
Or even the first half. Oh, my God, was that first half hard to watch?
Yes. I mean, at least we got to the second goal, which we've been, you know, we've been having a lot of first halves as one goal. But it was an exact repeat. Well, not exact, but, you know, it was pretty much carbon copy of some of our dismal first halves. You know, we just weren't getting good shots. We were missing a lot when we got them. It was awful to watch. And, you know, sort of the goals we were getting were slightly lucky. But, yes, it did turn around and look very... As soon as Zeeble turned the ball over to Edwards, that looked like very much a sort of... And from that moment on, it looked like, you know, the last 3 years of football. Not this year, obviously, but the previous three. And it looked... You know, we were doing them on the turnover and running over the top of them, even if it was a slightly different cast of characters. At least looked familiar.
It did. Actually, speaking of looking familiar, it did remind me of any number of games we've played against Carlton in the past 5 years, where they're a sneaky old team. Like their average age was less than 12 months younger than ours. And, you know, guys like Tarrant and Zeeble in the background and Aaron Hall, you probably don't think of someone who's 30 years old, but is. So, actually a fairly experienced lineup. So, but still with a frailty and a lack of confidence and talent in there. In their game plan to really be able to string four quarters together, I thought.
Yeah, I think that's definitely there was. Once we got on a roll, the emotional demons were there. And you used to see those when we're on top. You used to see teams just give up against us at certain points. And it very much had that feel. In fact, both teams were sneaky old because, you know, one thing I was going to say to you is one of the pleasing things about this game. Like, one of the very best things about the game was Thompson Dowell playing, who only just came in at the last moment when K-Mac didn't get up. And, you know, just it's so refreshing to when you see these games, when, you know, had a few less young, without Rioli, without Dow, you're sort of looking at the game going, well, we just beat the bottom team, which didn't feel like that before the game, and we should remember we were genuinely nervous beforehand, but afterwards you're going to go, well, they are the bottom team for a reason. But, you know, the extra little bit of flashes of youth certainly did make it. Look, I was thrilled after the game. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Look, that reaction is entirely appropriate. We had... six different players have their career high in disposals. From obviously, Maurice Rioli Jr. had a career high, but Callum Coleman.
Did you have to check the stats?
Callum Coleman Jones, Thompson Dow, Ralph Smith, Hugo Ralph Smith, Jack Graham, and Nick Fossen also with careers high. Dan Rioli won off his career high. Like that's pretty good. You get that from a game and. Take that.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And Rioli did, after the excitement of last week of me incorrectly saying his first two consecutive 20 possession games, he managed to do that this week.
Yes, he is. Yeah, does Dan make you feel safe, Andy?
I like his burst out of defence. I wouldn't say
both,
he's sort of...
Both he and his uncle? Both he and his uncle, yes, were the equal fastest players on the ground.
Yes. It's his uncle.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
there's some starting early, starting late in there to get there. But yes, Dan, Morris Jr. is Daniel's uncle.
Well, I wouldn't say Dan is all present and sort of oppressive in the way he sucks the life out of the defense, but he certainly he gives us it's just like going back to the point we talked about last week. The team feels fast again.
Definitely.
And it's sort of remarkable, like, you know, as you pointed out, Morris was the second, you know, equal fastest guy out there, and you know he's replacing George and Arts, and at least George is not. Is not slow, but
George is quick.
But just somehow, it's just Morris. Just it's that thing of youth, and he reminds me of young Dan, that he just got those chase down tackles which you weren't expecting. And you know, he bounced off tackles like young Dan did too. But there's just something about that enthusiasm and burst of youth that it felt like the team had you know, just that extra spark again.
He did, yeah, Morris. Like, he lacks, so he's, you know, because we've been seeing pictures of him for, you know, close to 10 years. Like, there's people have talked about him for, as a possible recruit for close to 5. So, sort of, he's very much been in the public spotlight, but he's transformed, you know, he was a bit, bit soft, like physically, as a maturing teenager, and you know he's trimmed down quite a bit. But now, the next step for him is building up that core strength. So he's got the weight to be able to really, you know, collar people from behind and drag them down, which he doesn't quite have yet. But he's pretty good. Tackling technique held up, I thought.
Yeah, it did. Well, it did especially when the person didn't see him coming. But, yeah, he didn't, which is often the case with undersized guys. But yeah, there's something there, and you know, he may only last a couple of games in the seniors. You could see why he might cycle out fairly quickly. But like all you want at this stage of the year, and we'll talk about finals a bit later, but. You know, assuming we're not going to win the flag without Dusty and an ounce and a half back and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all you want from the end of this year is a bit of hope for a flash for next year, and we really saw that. But let's roll that on, Nick.
Before we leave the Riolis, Dan had 32 high-speed sprints. The next highest player was 21. Like, he was absolutely busting a gut out there. And
I was gonna ask you, Nick, is that have you seen? Do you regularly check that stat? I noticed that too, but I must admit I don't normally look it up. Is that unusual to have that sort of disparity?
It's unusual to be that high. Yeah.
Okay.
Look, he often comes up as doing a lot of running, but. I don't know. Somehow in halfback, he's doing a bit less. I think he's unrewarded running. Like the plays coming to him, and he's finding the ball a bit more easily. Yeah, I think you know, so far tick.
But you know, that is the nature of the position too. If you sprint 30 meters into space, you often are the option. So, as we've discussed multiple times, it really seems to be suiting him. It'll be, you know, he's playing for a contract. But I think he's making himself some money over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think that contract, recent, but you know, word was he got fairly close early in the year to a 2-year extension. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that conversation comes around again pretty soon.
Well, you wouldn't want to lose him at this stage. The whispers are, you know, Hawley's not going to play again this year, and it's obviously quite a serious injury. So anyway, we covered that last week. Thompson Downick.
Yes. Yeah, his best game, I thought. Showed a little more burst than we've seen. Led the team in contested possessions. It was a pretty tidy bit of work, and completely ignored his left foot after stepping around someone in the fourth quarter, which I thought you'd approve of.
Yes, well, he could have done a better effort with the banana kick. But look, I agree. And the burst thing that stood out to me, and, you know, it is something when you get a whole bunch of older mids, we have been a bit one-paced in the midfield for a while. You know, Prestia is fast for a normal human being and fast for an AFL football, but he's not fast for a top-line mid, and he's probably the fastest of them now. And you just sort of notice that Thompson has that extra burst of youth. He's got a nice frame on him that looks like he's going to pack on a bit more size, and he's got beautiful ground skills. He can pick a ball up in traffic. He's got nice, you know, shed of light hands. There's just, I'm certainly, this is the highest I've ever been on the Thompson Down appreciation for his future talent. So I thought that was an imminently impressive game, and he should play from here on out. And he'll have probably down games again, but I think he should play every game for the rest of the year, because we want to get that experience into him, because I think he's part of the solution in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Again, needs some more weight, you know, through his core and hips to be able to hold his ground in a contest. But no, I thought he was good. And at the risk of sounding, you know, broken record, Hugo Ralph Smith, like, he's played some decent footy before, but this was a very good game. And I think, look, he was never a big possession winner as a junior, so I don't think it's realistic to expect that at senior AFL football. But I think we also saw, you know, he's had 17 disposals, 375 metres gained, 5 intercepts, 4 score involvements, a very nicely taken goal. Like, he only needs to up that performance and sort of, you know, 20% or so, and he's a really damaging footballer.
Yeah, at the risk of being a bit tedious, I completely agree. And the only thing I would add to that is he impressed me once. There was a free kick given against his teammate for shepherding, but twice he impressed me with his overhead work that I didn't think he had. So I think this is by far his most impressive game. Because the thing about the GWS game, I believe it was GWS where he kicked 2 miracle goals. Well, you're going to miss those a lot. Even the best players miss them more than they hit them. And he had sort of beginner's luck. But this game, he was doing a lot more sustainable things. And he just, you know, with the aerial ability as well, it more and more made me think, well, there's something, you know, really promising as a wingman.
You mentioned about Dan Rioli playing a couple of good games in a row. I thought Sydney Stack, if not quite as good as last week, it was proof of concept of him being just delivering solid, consistent football at senior level, I thought.
Well, I mean, huge. Let's not forget that, you know, he was sort of averaging around 12 disposals 3 weeks ago, and then he's now had another plus 20 possession game. Aside from his contested work, aside from the fact he really makes his positions count, like, he's getting heaps of the football. Like, yeah, again, sort of furiously agreeing and repeating each other, but it's more evidence that he's going to make it. And another one where Sydney's making himself some money too.
Yep, no, it's good. And I like his decision making, sort of coming through the middle of the field. He's generally making good decisions in that role, which is, yeah, which you know, with no Hawley, we certainly need. I think maybe finishing off the younger players, is it welcome back to CCJ Island for you?
Well, I mean, he kicked two goals, not bad. You know, one which was a bit lucky, the other which was fairly regulation, third tall, ruck forward. The ruckers weren't amazing, but he had a few hit-outs to advantage.
He was competitive, yeah.
His 14%, he had seven touches in the last, which is a sign of good tank, which is his seven touches in the last was one more than Chol had in the whole game before. Okay, that's a bit of an unfair comparison, but definitely a strong hold recommendation on those CCG Island shares options.
Yeah, because that was him both as a junior, but also in the VFL. He's just a high, because he's got a high endurance base. He can make a number of contests. Now, you know, the comparison with Chol is a far more explosive player, but yeah, the sort of maximizing what CCJ does well, you know, he's a big coordinated athlete, and if he can get around the ground and impact contests and make himself dangerous forward and take his chances, it's a good package.
By the way, I saw Chol short. He actually had eight touches against Fremantle, none in the last quarter. He had six against Geelong. So my apologies. But yeah, look, they bring different strengths. And, you know, he only had one intercept mark, and Chol almost always gets more than that. But look, I think there's more and more proof of concept that he's a viable AFL player at least.
Yeah, and he's, yeah. We're in for an interesting off-season. With him, I honestly think with, we've got a few players out of contract who'll attract some attention. But yeah, I think CCJ will be high on the list for a number of clubs.
If you had, if it was the same price, would there be any debate in your mind between him and Chol?
Oh no, not at all. Chol's a free agent, so it's just harder. It's harder to keep him as well, and he's a free agent every time he's out of contract. As well as CCJ's got another, I think it's 4 years until he's in the same stage. So yeah, I think that's easy for me. So, in typical fashion, we've, you know, just focused on the younger players, but it'd be a remiss not to mention how good it was to have Nick Vlostone back.
Well, absolutely. 30 possessions, as you pointed out, 10 intercepts, an incredibly high amount. Just getting the football all over the place, and he had six score involvements, which. You know, just to give you, I'm just checking out Gus stats. Yeah, Gus had two last time, which, okay, it's not a huge, like, I appreciate that's not a huge difference when you count how many possessions they're getting, but I just think, like, when Vossi gets in chains, they often end well, whereas, and just having that extra person, three, in fact, he didn't have a great day. He didn't have his best day with the ball. Yes, he had one absolute howler. But overall, he's part of the answer with the ball movement. And I think it really helps the overall team movement to sort of have that upgrade from Garth to Vlossy on the offensive side.
Oh, absolutely.
Least hot take ever.
Yeah. And just in organising the team as well. Yeah, good to have him back.
But you still haven't mentioned Jack Graham, which is in even more Richmond Tiger talk style that we didn't mention. That we haven't yet to mention the guy who's going to get three Brownlow votes.
Interesting, because on the AFL player ratings, Liam Baker clearly like good 20% better than anybody else on the ground. I agree. Graham may be more likely to get, you know, it's a big number, 36 disposals. What's
incredible
not,
amount of,
what's not
incredible
a big,
amount of pressure. Sorry.
A lot of pressure, Axe. What's not a big number is four contested possessions.
Yes. And tackles. It's just, it's a funny game. It
reflects the nature of the game, I think. It was very, it did feel quite bloodless in the first, particularly in the first half. Like, the tackle count was low, uncontested marks were high, you know, there's no atmosphere from the crowd, you know, and, you know, obviously North Melbourne has had a lot more experience playing in front of empty stadiums than we have. Like, we were struggling to create energy, I thought.
Yeah, and, like, it is a wonderful game, but before we get carried away, his last four games in a row, he's been in the... Sorry, the last three games in a row, he's been in the teens for possessions. He had 23 against the Magpies, and he had 8 against the Suns. It's sort of... You link the Carlton game and this game, which are the two bookends of his season thus far, and it looks great, and then everything else is pretty
it's a bit good. Up and down, Which is funny, you know.
You would think that someone with that upside and the way he plays, that actually they'll be, you know, he'd actually be more consistent with his numbers, but he's not.
Yeah, and at this stage of his career as well.
Yeah. Anyway, wonderful game this week.
Yeah. I thought for someone who's been a bit off the last couple of weeks, having, you know, when we restructured the team, Shane Edwards was very much part of the solution.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, the early on, he was still sort of trying peak shedder things. He tried one inboard kick, 45 metres on an angle under pressure with his left foot, which surprisingly enough didn't come off. But once he settled into it, well, we've already pointed out, you know, he actually probably had his two goals were absolutely turning crucial in turning the tide of the game. Mm. I completely agree. He was eventually an important contributor. Also, actually only had 14 possessions, which is quite low for him.
Yeah, but certainly impacted the game in the second half.
I think we wisely expected him to do less than we have recently.
Just with rejigging, I think with the forward line, there was a bit too much inexperience in how we structured. So, you know, the commentators mentioned about Morris getting in. Lynch's way, and I think a bit, you know, there's still a bit of work in progress there with Matty Parker as well. Whereas, Shane Edwards not only knows where to go, but he sort of knows where to go next.
Yeah, indeed. On Matty Parker, glad you brought him up. It's funny, is like I watched the game with a couple of cynical, grumpy people, and, you know, we're all in the game, we're all getting a bit stuck into Matty Parker.
People with whom you have a lot in common.
Well, exactly. You know, that's why we watch it together. We discuss craft beer in Richmond. And we're sort of, there's a lot of pointing out of Matty Parker's flaws, which are quite noticeable. He's a bit stiff. But it's interesting, though, when you speak to other, like, a lot of people, a lot of Richmond fans are reacting really well to him. And sort of the thing that I think is... You've got him, Arts, and George in the one forward line. It's something. But when you've sort of taken George out and he's just the one fast sort of chaos agent who's bashing into bodies, if you watch the last quarter, like he, in maybe the third as well, he was involved in quite a lot, aside from his own goal, he was involved in quite a lot of the key plays, like as a sort of...
The handball to Prestia,
Yeah, and there's a few other things that he did that just, you know, he's just smacking in. He's playing desperate. He's playing hard. There is, as the chaos agent, you know, as a serious sort of winger, he's less likable, but as sort of the potential George replacement. And look, we've gone on all this podcast and we haven't mentioned the fact that there were some fairly monumental changes happened at selection. You know, both Arts and George being dropped in the same game. That's a pretty big deal. That's sort of, you know, some of Dimmer's stalwarts and particularly George. So, yeah, like that's a big change. And, well, it definitely, Well, for the first time in at least for half a football, our forward line looked competent. So that's, you know, it's a small sample size, but thus far, that's good. But yeah, certainly when Parker's been surrounded, when Parker's got guys like Shedder close to him, I'm much more okay with him.
Yeah, there's a, that, you know, he runs hard, he's fast, applies pressure, is physical. And he can butcher some of his disposals. So there's a fine line of, you know, how neat he is with his disposal as sort of the pass fail mark. And yeah, I thought this week was better than previous weeks. But yeah, it's a constant challenge for him.
Yeah. But when he's playing absolutely desperate on edge, he can keep his spot. Quickly, it was nice that Prestia backed up with another very solid game.
Yeah, definitely.
Makes a huge difference in midfield.
Good to have him back.
But we needed to win the turnover game because we got done in the centre square again.
We did. Oh, particularly in the first half.
Yeah, very frustrating. It's ongoing frustration. And death riding bloody Western Bulldogs doing exactly the same thing against Essendon was painful on Sunday as
not
well.
Not much fun. No. Nank did get beaten, unfortunately. I mean, we should have mentioned in the preview, but frankly, I didn't do the work. But Goldstein's not in career best form, but he's been in the AFL for over a decade, and this is in no way a below average season for him. He's still a very good player, and unfortunately, one who's beaten a whole series of Richmond rucks in his time.
Yeah, I don't think Nank's ever beaten him.
No, Nank did do his best to try and kill opposition midfielders, particularly in the second half, though. So, you know, respect as always.
Yeah, it is delightful to watch, and having a sort of proper solid backup ruckman for him makes me. You know, it makes me even feel better, and maybe we can sort of play Nank even a bit less with his bad knee and just bring him on as a shock weapon, because he is very much, he does, you know, he comes on with impact, both literally and figuratively.
Yeah, we're not playing Nank at all. I mean, it was only one game, but we haven't played him at all forward, which is interesting, because, you know,
We have done it in the past.
And I think CCJ was certainly competent against Tom Campbell. So,
Yeah, might be injury related. I wouldn't read too much into it. We'll see next year. That's it. Look, much easier. We're much quicker this week about a game that we both actually enjoyed, unlike last week's.
Yeah.
Bamboo torture session. So yeah, just second half comeback. Young kids playing well, and even though we weren't an amazingly young team, it was very satisfying. So we've been the team that's bottom on the ladder that had an extremely strong incentive not to win, even though they were playing to win. They didn't rest anyone particular. They omitted. They rested one player. So yeah, good for us. But that, Nick, it does keep us in the top eight. Top eight picture, and people love analysing this, so we tend not to do it because so many people are across it already. My personal feel is that I'm just, you know, because we can't win a flag. Look, I'd love to play finals. I'd love to be a chaos agent, but my personal feeling is if we win the last two and then we don't make the finals, I can live with that. But I think it's going to be pretty tough, and it's going to be pretty tough this week, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're $2.70 to make the final. So, you know, less likely than likely, but not without a chance. So yeah, look, I've not really focused on finals. It's sort of just, you know, no, I think this is in part a reaction to everything else that's going on in the world. You know, it's, if ever there was a time to follow the advice of thousands of AFL senior coaches that have come before us and take things week by week. Now is that time. So, you know, the wins take care of themselves. And now I think we're at the stage where the wins need to take care of themselves and we need a bit of help and some extra percentage wouldn't hurt. But look, it's got to start with beating the Giants.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of like it's still in our power, and the you know, all sorts of funny things can happen if things break our way. I don't think it's all guaranteed. Essendon are going to win their last two games. So GWS just had an all-time Nick game, like absolutely flogged in the inside 50s.
Don't think I noticed that Geelong kicked bloody 15-5. Against us and then couldn't hit the side of a barn against GWS.
Bloody Western Bulldogs did against Essendon too. Like they Western Bulldogs probably should have won that on an even kicking game. So yeah, but by the way, in our game, even though North Melbourne felt like they were easy shots, pretty much the margin, expected points margin, was pretty close to the outcome. So not an issue, but yeah. Toby Green's obviously been rubbed out. Why Danger didn't for the same act in the grand final? Well, because Danger's a good bloke. You know, they are wounded. Lockie Whitfield's back in sort of number one draft pick form, though.
Yeah, and they've got... it's funny, when the Giants are a bit less star-studded, and they are genuinely... they genuinely scraped the bottom of their list last week. Like I how much I love to follow the AFL draft, and you know they had like Callum Brown, who's an Irishman, kicked a couple of goals. Look, they'll probably be getting a few guys back, but. When they're a bit stars and scrubs, they can have better team balance, but particularly that defence was very impressive, I thought.
Yeah, they actually... Remember last week I commented that Fremantle was at the point of youth where you almost never win? GWS were even younger against Geelong.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was quite a big difference. But... There's always with GWS that some of that youth
is extremely talented.
You know, academy picks, top 10 draft picks. The Sam Taylor, Nick Haynes, Isaac Cumming trio in defence, like they are particular. I mean, Haynes and Taylor, extremely good intercept players. And Cumming gives them... He had 18 rebound 50s against Geelong. That is a mammoth number. Like, 10's a big number by comparison. So, yeah, we're going to have to be very meticulous in how we bring the ball in to our forward 50 to stop those guys picking it off all day.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting because I reckon we probably won't make many changes, will we?
I don't think so.
Test for the new lineup.
Well, you're sort of McIntosh might be a chance to come back after being in late withdrawal.
There is a bit of a rumor that it's worse.
Yeah. But
anyway,
Broad apparently had a setback after being close. Travelled with the squad for the Fremantle game, so yeah, maybe only superficial changes, but yeah, that they'll probably get a couple of guys back. Obviously Toby Green out, but they might get Finlayson, Hopper, and Phil Davis back.
Yeah, and there's some, especially Hoppers, the big ends.
Oh yeah, that Hopper Ward and Taranto. In the middle, that's a formidable grunt at the coalface.
Yeah, and Ward's putting some heavy shift in late in his career. But Green's not playing. The other Green, the Richmond Green.
No, yeah, I know. Thank God,
because I just thought, like, the over under on how many mentions of Twitter about why he isn't playing for us would, you know, I mean, I feel the same way. It's just I don't want to be reminded all the time.
No, we should have an advantage in the ruck, like Briggs, who's number one ruck this week, Kieran Briggs. He's a, you know, he was reasonably highly drafted and is a big, solid, high jumping athlete. But yeah, it's a big step up to do four quarters against Nank, I would have thought, even with Nank carrying a bit of injury.
Yeah, but Nank with a worthy deputy who will continue the physical pressure on. Mm. So he won't be able to he'll have to come off. You know, he won't be able to sort of use his greater fitness. I think, Nick, I remember when we were crap or just around, and look, actually, we've probably been mediocre more of our lives than actually legitimately awful, except for a period in the late 80s. But I was sort of like, you just
and,
at this
and
end
early
of
2000s.
Yeah, just at this kind of time of year, if you're not very good, you just want to be playing meaningful football. That's like, that's like, I mean, it was a compromise from our dreams, but at least, like, there are 2 weeks to go. You know, Melbourne's locked down, but at least we're still in the hunt, and I'm grateful for that, and I'm excited for the game of football, and I'm excited about seeing some of the new kids play. So I'm grateful for all of those things.
It could be a very stodgy game of football. Like, you're talking about a, you know, GWS with, you know, good clearance team, hard tackling, did a fantastic job defending against Geelong, probably going to have trouble scoring goals with Toby Green out injured. Like, our defence, I think it's 6th or 7th in least points conceded on the year. So, you know, aside from the odd period, we, you know, it's held up, and particularly when we've got, you know, with Vossi, Grimes, Asprey with the younger kids, you know, they should hold up pretty well. But if both teams' least performing areas is their forward line, it could be a stodgy day at the office.
Yeah, well, we've had a few of those, so it's a fair prediction. I prefer to look on the optimistic side at this stage, since it's a Monday night. The goal of last week hasn't come off yet, so I'm looking forward to it. And look, we don't know when it'll be, but there's no rain scheduled for this week in Melbourne. You know, it may not even matter. We may be at Docklands, but I'm looking forward to it, and I'm just excited about, you know, give me some more of that sweet, sweet Thompson Dow action.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy's played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Pick up Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Coming to slow. He's gone. No free kick, surely.
In the final home and away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Stuff of legend and champion, Justin. Tigers.